Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. There is a better way to practice architecture. When you build a thriving business, you will then have the time and the financial resources to do your best work, to design the architecture that you want to design. We've built a powerful program of resources, training, and community for you, the small firm architect. We'll show you how to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Entree Architect Academy. To learn more, visit the homepage at entrearchitect.com. This is Entree Architect Podcast, and you're listening to episode 177. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. I'm back with another episode from our podcast series called The Entrepreneur Architect, where I interview you, members of the Entree Architect community. I want to know your story. I want to give you an opportunity to come on the show and share some of your knowledge. We all have a story about how we were inspired to pursue a career in architecture, a story about the people who influenced us along the way, a story about how we became entrepreneur architects. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, we have a landscape architect with us, Daniel Roby, entrepreneur architect. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, BQE Software, and ArtCat. And I'm going to share a little bit more about these great companies later in the show. But before we get started here, take a quick note to schedule some time later this week to visit each one of them. Go check them out and let them know that you appreciate them supporting us, the Entree Architect community. Daniel Roby, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate you taking the opportunity to talk with a landscape guy after. That's really not your target audience, but hopefully I can provide some insight on what I do. And I'm sure there's some other landscape architects out there listening to your podcast as well, hoping to provide a little insight.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you reached out, because you'd be surprised how many, you may not be surprised at how many landscape architects are in the community.
Oh, good.
They reach out to me all the time. I look at landscape architects and architects as brothers and sisters, you know, that we're right. All from the same place. We certainly are practicing the same way. The struggles that we have as architects are certainly being the same struggles and successes that landscape architects have. So it's great to have you here. I love having you here in order to have this conversation. So let me give you a little intro to who you are. Daniel Roby, landscape architect, the owner of Huntlands Landscape Architecture, based in Northern Virginia and the surrounding regions. He received a bachelor degree in landscape architecture from Clemson in 2002 and is a licensed professional landscape architect in the state of Virginia, a lead green associate, and a multi-award winning designer for over 15 years. Daniel lives in Hamilton, Virginia, with his wife Muffy and three kids, Maris, Charlie, and Hank. So that sort of gives a little bit of background. I'd love for you, Daniel, to give us a little bit more depth. Go back to where you discovered landscape architecture. What inspired you to become a landscape architect? And tell us your journey from that point to where you are today.
Sure. I think probably starting back, just like all of your other people that you have on the podcast, I started out loving to draw, anything artistic. That was always something that I really loved to do, but didn't know about architecture early on or landscape architecture. I always thought I wanted to draw cartoons. I would always draw, anything I'd see on TV, or whether that was something in a comic book. That was always what I loved to do, drawing funny cartoons, making people laugh, things like that. And then I hit about middle school, early high school, and found golf. And I just completely fell in love with golf. Everything in my life revolved around it. I read about it. I played it. I worked at the golf course. Everything involved golf. And then when it came time to figure out what I wanted to do after high school, I started researching some things and, kind of fell upon it through a trip that I had on the golf team in high school. We went to a local golf course that was under construction with Gary Player, and he walked us around the course with his architect, and they talked about, let's move some bunkers here, let's make this green a little different. And I said, well, this is it. This is exactly what I want to do. It just combines everything that I want to do. So that was kind of the career path I was looking at. And majored in landscape architecture from Clemson University. Along the way, really realized that getting into golf course architecture is a pretty tough job to get into. You really need a name behind you or an ex-player. So I really started to look at some other options. So I did a number of internships while I was at Clemson University. Worked for a land planning company, doing kind of civil engineering, land planning. Also did two internships in Charleston, South Carolina. One was doing, residential install work down by the Battery, all the historic homes, just grunt work in the 110 degree heat all day in the summer, but loved it, absolutely loved it. And then did another internship in Charleston at the Parks Department, doing some really interesting things down there. So really kind of got exposed to a lot of different avenues. And then after graduated Clemson, their program was really heavy on more land planning, large scale development. So that was what I went to after college. And that was in Charlotte, North Carolina, working for a land planning civil engineering firm. But I was doing CAD work all day, really wasn't expressing that kind of artistic side of things. And I always thought back to that internship I had in Charleston doing some of that residential install work, which was so much fun. So I really thought, well, maybe I'll go to the residential side of things, and ended up moving back home after the birth, or right before the birth of our first child, working for a small company, then moved on to another larger residential landscape design company, Design Build, and worked for them for the past 13 years. And then just this past February, opened up my new business doing high-end landscape architecture. So that's kind of the process from the very start to where I am right now.
Yeah. Cool. Well, congratulations on the new firm. That's pretty cool.
Thank you. It's very exciting.
Big step. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's exciting and scary all at the same time, right?
Yeah, exactly. On a minute by minute basis. Yeah, it's a constant roller coaster.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But having a great time doing it though. Really enjoying it.
Good. So I want to clarify what a landscape architect does, just so we sort of understand that clearly.
Yeah, that's, when we're talking about landscape architecture, that's always the struggle I have, is when I tell people that I'm a landscape architect, I get all kinds of feedback from them.
Yep.
It seems that there's a lot of misunderstanding out there as far as what I do and what landscape architects do in general. It's a pretty wide range of projects that we can work on, but, I've gotten everything from you know, when I tell them a landscape architect, they say, oh, well, can you come to my house and tell me why my hydrangeas aren't blooming? Or can you come and give me an estimate to put some mulch down? And, you know, I kind of have to back up and educate them on exactly what I do. So specific to what I do for my firm, I do high-end residential landscape architecture. I'm working with elements of plantings, hardscape, you know, whether it's a wall, outdoor fireplace, outdoor kitchen. I do a lot of architectural structures, whether that's a, you know, simple gate, arbor, pergola, pavilion, deck, screen porch, you know, even get into pool houses where I'll partner with an architect. So I'm looking at those elements, and then also a lot of water features, whether that's a small fountain up to a, you know, a large pool, infinity edge pools, you know, all the, you know, nice bells and whistles that come with some of those structures. And then tying all that together into kind of one cohesive element, and then adding in pieces like the outdoor lighting, the irrigation, integrated audio, you know, all those, you know, high end bells and whistles that are out there. I kind of put all those features together is really what I do as part of my company.
Yeah. That's one of the common themes and concerns that architects have is trying to communicate what architects do.
Right.
And what our role is. And so I can just imagine how even more difficult it is for a landscape architect to explain what they do.
Right.
I appreciate the opportunity for you to be able to explain that.
It is. I think as soon as you say landscape, you know, people just think, you know, landscapers. And it's kind of like someone, you telling yourself, you know, telling somebody that you know that you're an architect, and they say, oh, well, maybe you can come over and tell me what's wrong with my, you know, air conditioning system. You know, it's kind of that, it's kind of a similar thing, you know, they just don't quite understand exactly the scope of the services that we can provide.
Yeah. Good. So let's start with the first question, your big goal. So in, other than becoming a landscape architect and other than starting your own firm, unless that's the one you're going to say,
right.
Was there one specific goal that you had that you achieved, and can you explain that goal and how you achieved it?
Yeah, you know, the thing that I thought about was really, you know, starting this business because, you know, there for a while, the last company I was with was a very good company, had a very good experience with them, but just the opportunity to advance, just, you know, I didn't see that there. So I had been, you know, testing the job market out there to see what was out there and just wasn't getting any feedback. And I never, ever thought I'd want to start my own business. Never had any dreams of doing that. But after a while, I thought, well, you know, I think if I really want to advance my career and look at new opportunities, it's really the best thing for me to do. So that was a huge goal that I'd set up and really worked towards this for probably, you know, 10 to 12 months before I did it, you know, getting everything lined up, reading everything I could, listening to every podcast like yours. That I could to kind of get every kind of information, because I'm definitely not business minded. I think a lot of architects, designers, period, you know, that side of the brain doesn't work as well as, you know, drawing and the more creative side of things. So it was pretty tough to get my head wrapped around that. So that really was a big goal of mine to open the business, and very proud of myself for doing that. And you know, looking back, it was a huge learning experience.
Yeah, the most difficult part, I think, of starting a new firm is that decision to start the new firm.
Right.
To get past the fear and say, okay, I'm going to do this.
Right. You know, and especially being established in this company for the last, you know, 13 years, having three kids at home, you know, it's a little different than starting it, you know, when you're by yourself. I've got a little bit more on the line here. So it was a little bit of a nerve-wracking decision, but I'm really glad I did it.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of listeners can relate to you.
Right.
In making that decision, especially, you know, especially with a family, you know, and having those responsibilities. That is a huge responsibility and a huge leap of faith that it's going to work.
Right.
It does take quite a bit of courage to do what you did.
Sure. And on the same side of things, you know, it's allowed me to be at home a lot more, be more involved with the kids, you know, be here when they get off the bus, which has been just a blessing. It's been so much fun.
Yeah. That for me, that's the number one thing.
You right.
know, when I define entrepreneur architect, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, a guy out there trying to make money as an architect. That's not how I define entrepreneur architect. Certainly that's a huge part of it, because that allows us to do all the other things that we want to do. But the freedom and the integration of my life with my firm is by mm-hmm. far the most powerful piece of what I do as a small firm, entrepreneur architect.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would agree with that 100%.
And when I look back and no matter what struggles I have, you know, by doing this, because it's much easier to just go work for somebody else.
Right.
No doubt about it. Easier.
Right.
But when I look back at my life when I'm old and my kids are grown and I have grandchildren, I will never regret becoming an entrepreneur architect.
Right.
And having that time to spend with my kids and to be able to be part of their lives as they grow up.
Right. Right. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
What are some of the struggles that you've encountered along the way of getting to where you are?
You know, I think, some of them, early on were, some of them were simple little things, just like figuring out how I set up my email. I mean, it goes from the smallest little thing like that up to, building my contract, putting that together. I had some issues with some interactions with some lawyers, looking at my contract. So I had some issues with that. And then also I'm in a little bit of a different area than where I worked for the past 13 years. I worked inside the Beltway closer to Washington, D.C. Where I live now is about 35, 40 miles west of the city. So I'm in a little bit more of a rural neighborhood, but it's where I grew up. It's in the county that I grew up, and I really want to establish myself out here. But it's a little bit of a tighter knit circle to break into. So that's one of the challenges that I'm currently, working on every day, trying to meet as many people as I can, trying to work my way into those circles and educate them on what I can do and what I can bring to them. So I'd say that it really ranges. I think it's a struggle every day, like you're saying, between finding those leads and, just the big things, the little things.
So what are some of the things that you're doing to establish yourself? That's certainly something that many architects who start their own firms struggle with as well.
Sure.
Okay. I'm even if you are in the same region that you were working before, mm-hmm. you have to announce to the world that you are doing what you're doing.
Sure.
And market yourself. So what are some of the things that you're doing?
So the very first thing I started out doing was reaching out to local architects, builders, interior designers, selected contractors, and writing them letters and really announcing my business and, handing out a lot of cards. I wanted to try and go that route rather than, put ads in the newspaper. I'm trying to really kind of do a little bit more direct marketing to those professionals that I really hope to collaborate with. Not only to get, better leads through them, but also to avoid a lot of the tire kickers. A lot of the people that are just out there, can give me a price for that and this. And the people that kind of understand more of what I do. So I started out, I've probably sent out probably 100 different letters, and through those have gotten, probably I'd say between 30 and 50% of them, I get answers back. And set up a lot of meetings with them. And that's really been beneficial to getting some of these jobs early on in the process. I've also joined a number of local networking. There's a small business networking association here in Western Loudoun County that I joined. And then there's also a custom builders networking association, because I'm trying to do a lot of work with custom builders because I feel like that's the similar kind of clientele. So I've been doing a lot of that networking, which is a little bit out of what I typically like to do. I'm not that kind of person to go out and shake hands and meet everybody, but I really try to go out of my comfort zone and really get myself out there, which has been that's been a little bit of a struggle too, but it's been fun. I've really enjoyed meeting all the people out here.
Yeah, I mean that's a requirement. As a business owner, you have to get out there and you do those things. I think a lot of architects and landscape architects, creative people, are introverts.
Right.
And that's really difficult, including myself, to get out there and to meet people and shake hands and introduce yourself. But the more you do it, the better you get at it. And you start to overcome it. You always have a little bit of that fear getting into it. But once you sort of get into the routine of how you do it and see the success that comes with it, it gets a little bit easier.
It's been extremely gratifying meeting a lot of people that are genuinely interested in helping you. That's what I've found. It's really kind of blown me away. And it's been, it kind of takes that edge off going out and meeting people, because there are so many people that want to help you because they've been in the same situation as you have. And it's been great. Great process.
Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, FreshBooks, BQE Software, and Arcat. 192 hours. That works out to about 2 business days every month. And when you're a small firm architect using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you can save this year. That's time that you can spend doing the things you love, like being an architect. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track time for your whole team, by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, my favorite, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free, and be sure to enter Entree Architect in that How Did You Hear About Us section. One of the most often requested resources here at Entree Architect Community is project management software. I hear it all the time. How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? This podcast is sponsored by AIA Advantage Partners BQE Software. They are the makers of ArchiOffice. ArchiOffice is the only time tracking, billing, and project management software made by architects for architects. It empowers you to easily and quickly understand everything about your projects, your staff, and finances, all in one place, wherever you are. And listeners here at Entree Architect Podcast can get a free 15-day trial of ArchiOffice at entrearchitect.com/BQE. That's entrearchitect.com/BQE. If you've been listening to this podcast anytime during the last few months, you've heard me talking about ARCAT. And hopefully you're already using their free resources on a regular basis. But for those of you who have maybe not checked them out yet, ARCAT's a great tool for small firm architects like you. ARCAT has huge libraries of free content, CAD, BIM, specifications, and more. And they've done all the work for you. You need a spec? Click on over and download the CSI 3-part specification in multiple formats, all for free. How about a CAD detail or BIM objects? All free at the click of a mouse. ARCAT has tons of building product content ready for you to use, and it's all completely free. And you don't have to register to download any of it. And they've recently launched something new that I want you to go check out. It's called Charette. Create a project, assign tasks, share and collaborate with colleagues and clients in real time. Pull content from the ARCAT database, all that free stuff I'm talking about, you can pull it there and throw it into Charette. Anywhere on the web, found something out on the web, pull it in, put it into Charette. It all keeps it organized in one place, and you can collaborate with your clients and your colleagues. And this is free too. So visit them at entrearchitect.com/ARCAT, that's A-R-C-A-T, entrearchitect.com/ARCAT, and click on the Charette icon right there on the homepage to learn more. FreshBooks, BQE Software, and ARCAT. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Has there been an aha moment since you started the firm that sort of the bells went off and said, oh, here it is. This is what I need to do.
You know, I thought about the aha moment in a moment, and it really kind of came before I started it. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, right when I was kind of on the edge of, am I going to do this? Am I not going to do this? And it was really, it was not really my aha moment. It was through one of the guests that you had on one of your podcasts. It was Eric Reinhold that wrote Architect Entrepreneur. He's got a part in the book that says, you know, if this business doesn't work out, well, I just have to get another job. And that was that aha moment that what's the worst that can happen? You know? So that really, I think that's the biggest thing that sticks out in my head that I keep thinking about, you know, I just keep pushing forward. And if it doesn't work out, you know, I'm going to try my damnedest to get it to work out. But if not, you know, I can get a job. So that was really, it's kind of a comforting fact.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Eric's great. He's been on the show several times. Right. We did a whole series of podcasts with him. We'll actually link those on the show notes for this episode. This episode is 177. So entrearchitect.com/episode177. And we'll have links to all of Eric's podcast episodes so people can listen to those. Very inspiring and motivating.
They are. Yeah. That really helped me out. That was the very first book I read, once I tried to start this the business and kind of that planning stage.
So what makes you unique? So what are you doing to sort of separate yourself from the other people doing the same thing that you're doing?
So in the area that I'm at, in Northern Virginia, there aren't too many people doing the same thing I'm doing. There's a lot of more design build businesses. That's kind of the business model out here in more of the rural areas, the more rural suburbs of DC.
And mostly build design, owned by builders who are doing design.
You know, exactly. You know, so you've got a lot of people that have all the in-house, whether it's designers, project managers, and all the crews are in-house. Yep. I'm a little bit different. There are some companies set up like mine, more set up like an architecture firm, which is really what I model myself out of. But those companies are more, to the north and east of the city. So I'm a little bit unique in that aspect out here. But also, I think what I bring to the table is the amount of experience that I had with my last job. I not only designed everything, but I managed everything down from ordering materials to working with subcontractors. I did, soup to nuts on these projects, anywhere from, a little $5,000 project up to, I think my largest project was about $3 million project on a residence. Everything, you would ever want outside. So I've got that experience on both sides, design and the implementation of it, I think I really bring to it. And then also I try and focus on a lot of hand graphics. And I think that's a little bit of a lost art, especially with some of the newer, designers coming out of college. And I feel like there's this kind of this underlying craft movement, kind of this anti-Walmart, not the big computer generated drawings. And I think especially when you're looking at a residential client, they find a little bit more warmth when you've got a hand-drawn, at least initial concept. They have a little bit more, it's a little bit more of a personalized approach. So I'm trying to do a lot of hand graphics, at least early on, until we get into the build side of things. And I think that really, the clients really latch onto that and they really appreciate that time.
Yeah, I think that is something that is makes you unique. With clients, when you do hand drawing, It's for one, it's seductive. People just are seduced by that because it's not so clean. And when you present a computer drawing, they have no idea how long it took to put together a computer drawing. They assume that you just pushed the button and the computer popped that out. But but when you do a hand drawing, there's no doubt that your hand drew that drawing. And clients see that as magic because they can't do that. So when they see a hand drawing, they are impressed. They actually think that this is and as they should that this is an amazing thing, because it is something that many of us sort of growing up drawing cartoons and we've always been able to do that right. We've always been able to draw and as kids probably also realize that not everybody can, but as you become a professional, then you really realize that what we do when you do it by hand, it really looks like magic to our clients. And it's a great opportunity to market yourself. And I think a lot of firms are missing that opportunity by not presenting any hand drawings at all. We do a lot of hand drawings in schematic design specifically for that.
Right. I think there's a romance about it. I think when people think about architects, they think people drawing and blueprinting, it's that romantic feeling. And I've also had the reverse effect when doing I used to, my old firm did a lot of very high-end 3D renderings that looked like, somebody took a picture of the property. And you'd have those certain clients that would, they'd really zone in on one little piece of that and say, well, you don't have the white flowers that you had here, or that wood grain is different than what you actually built. And they almost take it too literal. So you can almost go the, polar opposite of the end. And people focus on what you're not supposed to. So that hand drawing, it shows them enough detail, but not too much to where they're, not being able to see the forest through the trees.
Right. And it's a signal that it's not finished.
Right.
When it's hand drawing, it typically communicates to whomever's looking at that drawing that that's not the finished representation.
Right.
When you get into the final construction drawings, that's the message that this is the final, set of drawings. But when they're hand, it clearly communicates to the client that this is a process.
Right. Right.
And sometimes when you bring computer aided drawings in too early, clients misunderstand and they think, yeah. that's we're done. Right.
Right. Right. And I like to do lots of options initially. I don't like to show them one final computer drawing. I like to do a couple hand-drawn options on trace paper. And again, it's that kind of that romance, that letting them be part of that design process. Yeah. Everything's not done right now. So you seem to latch onto that.
Especially if you're sketching right in front of them.
Right.
Then they really think you're a magician.
Yeah. Right, right.
So what age did you decide to become a landscape architect?
So I'd say it was probably later in high school. So I'd probably say around 16, 17 when I really latched on to that golf course architecture. That's when I really zoned in on being a landscape architect.
Do you remember that moment when you were there walking that course
and oh yeah.
And it dawned on you that, oh my goodness, this is a profession. I could do this forever.
Yeah, I just never knew that was something that somebody could do. And it just kind of combined everything I wanted to do, golf, sports, outside, drawing. You know, it just seemed like the absolute perfect fit. So that was a neat moment.
I think that's when, for me, becoming an architect, I knew very early, 10 years old. And so I never really considered anything else. And so I think I missed that opportunity to have that feeling. Because
right.
It was always just part of who I was as far as I can remember.
Right.
But when you when you're a high school student and you're sort of struggling to figure out what you want to do with your life and it clicks,
right.
And you have that aha moment, like, oh my goodness, this is something that I can do forever. And I'm going to go pursue this.
Right.
That's an exciting moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your target market, you said, was high-end residential. Anything specific in high-end residential?
High-end residential, I'm trying to work with some custom home builders and trying to get on very early in the process, because it seems like a lot of times the landscape architects sometimes called in after everything's designed. And you've got, a window in a spot that should be a door with how it relates to a future pool. Or the builders put the septic field right where you want to put the pool, or the well is in the wrong spot. And I know there's sometimes you don't have any choice in the matter, but being able to look at the big picture all at once, I think is the best. I think the homeowner is going to get the best value, the best product, when you've got that cohesive picture. So ideally, that's my target market, and I know that's not going to be every job. But again, high-end residential, I think, is what I'm after. And there's also, in the area where I'm at, there's also a lot of wineries. There's a lot of agricultural tourism. And I think some of those kind of rural commercial areas kind of have some of the similar elements to a high-end residential, client. So I'm trying to, market towards them as well, which could be a nice opportunity.
Yeah. And so with the residential, you said you're marketing to architects, right? Not to to homeowners.
A little bit of both. More towards the architects and the builders is what I've been trying to do
so
these early months.
So they can introduce you to the process.
Correct, correct. Because I think a lot of times, they like to partner with somebody that they know they work well together with.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a really nice team.
Yeah. That's when I'm looking for a landscape architect or an interior designer. I'd always prefer to bring in the people that I've worked with before.
Correct.
And introduce those people, even contractors, introduce those people to our clients, allow the clients to hire them directly in my case. I introduce them and try to build that team that can work together.
Sure.
Especially with landscape architect, you want them on really early, because
right.
when you're doing siting, that's important to understand the rest of the design.
Sure.
And not wait until, So all you architects out there listening, if you're doing a project that requires a landscape architect, hire early.
That's right. Bring me in early.
Yeah,
absolutely. There's so much overlap between the architecture and the landscape architecture. If you've got that team established very early on, it just makes for a much better process.
And it makes the architecture better.
Sure.
In my case, when I've worked with landscape architects and we've collaborated like that early on, the architecture has gone up, two, three times what it was, because now it's integrated with outside in a very thoughtful way.
Sure.
And it becomes a better piece of architecture.
Sure. Sure.
How do you charge? What's your fee structure? Stipulated sum, hourly, percentage based, something else?
So I work, you know, again, very somewhat similar to an architect. I work in three phases: conceptual design, construction detailing, and project administration. For the first two, conceptual design and construction detailing, ideally it would be stipulated sum, but you know, as many of your you know, podcast guests have said, you know, it depends on the scope. If that's not well defined, then I do go into an hourly fee structure. Project administration is, you know, that's all hourly work.
Okay. Other than architecture, what makes you happy?
You know, again, anything with the kids. I'm involved with a lot of their sports. I do some coaching, which I absolutely love. Golf, again, goes back to golf. Anything outside.
Do you still play a lot?
You know, I wish I did, but having three kids, it's hard to tell your wife you're leaving for 5 hours. Yeah.
But, see you later.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? Another benefit of starting your own business and working from home, you've got a few more opportunities to sneak off to the golf course if you want to.
Right. And they become business expenses.
Absolutely. That's right.
Yeah. You know,
that's right.
You're you know, trying to get a client, you know, or working with consultants.
Sure.
You can write all that off.
Sure.
Best advice you've ever received?
One of my internships, when I was working in Charleston, I had a person tell me that after you graduate, you should work three jobs in your first 5 years to find your niche. And I always thought about that after I graduated. And, you know, I would tell that to anybody I know, especially you know, between architecture and landscape architecture, there's so many different avenues you can go, and you just don't exactly know what's going to be the best fit until you find it. And I think not, you know, locking yourself in right after college is the way to go. You know, not to say, you know, go ahead and quit these good jobs, but, you know, make sure you find the good fit for you. I think that was the best advice.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And I sometimes think you do need to quit that good job when you're at that age and that experience level in your career. Even if it's a good job, I think you're right. I think young architects should be out there exploring their opportunities, because it might be a good paying job, or they may really be happy doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But you don't know, there might be something even better if you go and try something else.
Right.
I think three positions in 5 years is a good advice.
Mm-hmm.
Personal habit or a daily routine that contributes to your success?
You know, two things. I think one, I work from home, so I think number one is just discipline. Hmm. You know, that's key, is to, you know, have discipline, have a routine.
How do you do that? What are you doing specifically to make that happen?
You know, I try and keep on a schedule. I'm pretty good about, you know, sticking to a schedule as far as, you know, when I'm looking at invoicing, when I'm looking at, you know, tracking leads, you know, all those systems in place, as you've talked about many, many times, getting those in place early and sticking to them. I think that's key. And then I think the other thing I would have to say that I've learned from doing this, in my last job and, you know, all the other jobs before, you know, there's this culture of being busy all the time. Yeah. If you're not busy, something's wrong. And I've learned to take some time during the day, not to be quote unquote busy, because you really think so much better. You know, that's why everybody has good ideas in the shower, because they're not busy. You know, it's that same idea, you know, whether that's, you know, taking some time just to read a book, or taking some time just to, you know, go outside and water the garden in the middle of the day, something like that. I think I found that extremely, extremely beneficial. But it's hard when you're used to having to be busy all the time to say, okay, let's take a break. And things, you know, if you're struggling on design, they just flush themselves out during those times. And I found that extremely beneficial.
Yeah. Do you schedule that, or is that just something you say, oh, I feel I need to stop and get outside?
Yeah, I don't schedule that. Typically I'll do it, you know, after lunch. You know, I'll typically, you know, take a breather, you know, go outside or do something just away from, you know, the busy.
Do you have a recommended app or an internet resource?
You know, I'd have to just say Instagram. That completely changed how I view social media. I had never been a Facebook person or Twitter or anything, and was kind of you know, adverse to it at first, but somebody said, hey, you should really go on Instagram. I thought it was just a whole bunch of people taking pictures of their dinner or, you know, pictures of their new babies, you know?
Yeah.
But I really found so many businesses, architects, landscape architects, designers of all ranges show so much work. And it's not, I enjoy Hals and I enjoy Pinterest, but those are finished pretty pictures. I enjoy seeing the process. I think that's what Instagram really benefits the most from, because you're seeing the behind the scenes of their dirty sketches. You're seeing
real
the construction photos. Yeah. And I am just so happy, you know, every day looking at that and, you know, just found so much inspiration through Instagram.
So have you had any direct response that you could point to that say that resulted from Instagram?
You know, early when I started, you know, forming the business, that was kind of the same time I started putting some of my drawings on Instagram. I do a lot of my sketches on Instagram, and I really kind of use it almost as a business blog. And I would get, every once in a while, I'd get some feedback from other professionals, like some well-known professionals that I know. And it just gave me this confidence boost that, you know, maybe it sounds trite, but it was something to kind of give me that extra push that says, hey, this other professional who's well-established thinks that what you're doing is really good. That,
confirmation.
That means a lot with somebody that's trying to start a business. So that was really a huge push and a huge asset.
That's a great response to that.
Yeah.
What's your username for anybody who wants to go check you out?
It's Huntlands LA.
Okay. Huntlands. So Huntlands LA.
Correct. Yep. Correct.
Okay. Go check them out. Go sign up. Get, you know, follow and go share
that's
it with
right.
some other friends and show them what, let's get some numbers up on his user count there.
That's right. I love it. Love to meet everybody. It's a neat community.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the best parts that I think about all of the social media that we're on is the community that we're building around it. You know, you see that in Twitter, great community of architects on Twitter and Facebook on the Entre Architect community, Facebook group, the private group, you know, really, really great people.
Yeah. And sharing ideas. It's not just looking at pictures. Everybody's asking, well, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? And it's just a constant sharing of ideas. It's kind of a giant peer group. It's great.
Yeah. Yep. A recommended book. And why would you recommend it?
You know, I'd have to go back to, I think, two. And again, I came across them through listening to your podcast. So I just want to say thank you to that.
You're
welcome.
One
was Architect Entrepreneur that we talked about earlier.
Eric Reinholt.
That was a great one because it's specific with what I was starting. I think it was hard to find a book about entrepreneurship in architectural or design because it's a different market than anybody else trying to start anything. And then also E-Myth, I came about that book through your podcast as well. And that, you know, just the key that I got from that was to work on your business, not just work in your business. And that, I think about that every day. If I'm having a day where I'm like, I never think another lead's going to come in, I'll say, okay, let's work on the business. And I'll reach out to somebody else, or I'll send a quick little thank you note to somebody. Just, you know, keeping working on the business every day. I try and do that. And I think that was, you know, the main thing I got from that book.
Yeah. Excellent book. I would recommend everybody, whether you're a startup or an experienced architect, if you haven't read The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, go read it.
Absolutely.
It'll change the way you look at your business. And you had mentioned before, you're a sole practitioner. You know, you're working
Correct.
By yourself. You had mentioned that you set up systems. And how important are those systems to you? Because I get pushback on that from sole practitioners. I don't really need systems. I'm all by myself. I know what I'm doing. How do I, you know, so why do you have systems put in place?
Well, you know, I kind of feel out of control if I don't have them. You know, I've got some set up systems for lead tracking, set up systems for my invoicing. You know, I think if I don't have those systems in place, I just feel like I'm floating along. And it just helps me feel more at ease, you know, being able to go back and track everything. It just helps me feel more in control. You know, I think as designers, you want to be in control of everything.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a natural progression. It's hard to do it. It's hard to sit in front of Excel or sit down and put those systems together. But once you get it, it's kind of a little bit of a relief. You can kind of sit back. You can look at everything as a snapshot. And it just helps that, you know, that feeling that you're in control and you're not just out here floating around.
Yeah. And control reduces your stress.
Right.
When you know you're in control, your stress level goes down. And when you're
sure.
not, and if you have to think about what you have to do all the time and what's next and how I do that again, the stress level goes up. And we have so many things going on. You know, we all know how stressed we are. When you put in systems, it helps that. Stress doesn't go away because the stress is always there, but it helps. It also helps you make more money because, you know, you're more efficient and it allows you more time to design.
Sure.
Because you're more efficient.
Sure.
Let's get to the question that I ask everybody, whether we're on the series or not. What is the one thing an entrepreneur architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
You know, I think, you know, just going back to what I said before is to work on business development. I found that very beneficial to work on that every day.
Anything I'm specific?
Constantly, you know, I've found it's beneficial doing a lot of research in the area. I'll even take a little bit of time, you know, not to be busy like we were talking about before, just driving around to some of the areas that I want to work in, just seeing who's working in the area and see if there's a specific architect, you know, see a job site sign, going out and doing that research and then reaching out to them, you know, taking time to see what else is going on in the area. I've found that very beneficial. You know, just those quick emails to other professionals, you know, just constantly working on that business development is what I found to really help me out early on in the game here.
With the emails, is there any specific approach that you're, because you're cold emailing these guys, right?
And
right. Women. How are you doing that and getting some response?
You know, I'll typically start with that letter early on. Again, mm-hmm. I think a letter is a little bit more of a personalized approach, and then follow that up with an email or a phone call.
Following up,
and trying to really gear it as not only a benefit for me, but a benefit for them as well. You know, one example is if I'm working with a custom home builder, if I'm doing a design for them, they can, you know, actually self-perform some of that construction on the outside, some additional revenue for them. So I'll try and kind of gear that interaction towards them, say, look, this could really help you out if we talk. So I think as long as they feel that there's something in it for them potentially, I think that really helps, you know, kind of have the next step and have them, you know, schedule that next meeting or, you know, bring you into a job.
That's a great approach that you focus on how you can help them rather than, you know, I need you to hire me because this is what I need.
Right.
You know, so it's a focus on how you can make their job easier or how you can make more money for them or make them look better.
Right.
When a contractor does that to me, consultants too, but when contractors make me look good to my client, it's one of my favorite contractors.
Right.
Because there aren't a lot of them out there.
Exactly.
But when they do that and they understand that is important, that making me look good in front of my client is a marketing strategy.
Right.
It works, you know, as long as it's sincere, you know?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it also signals to me that they're a team player, that they want to play as a team.
Yeah. And that's the best approach when everybody's out for each other. You know, it's not, you know, a lot of finger pointing. If you're in there as a team, it's just the best approach.
Yeah. So let's wrap up with a parting piece of guidance for our listeners and how we might be able to contact you if we wanted to reach out and say hi.
Sure. I think, you know, I think the best guidance that I could say is just to get out of your comfort zone and really put yourself out there. You know, like doing a podcast, this is not something that I typically would do. And it's, you know, you just got to consistently put yourself out there because you just never know who you're going to come across, who's going to find you, through whatever those methods are. You know, I try and do a little bit of that every day, you know, reaching out to brand new people cold is something that, you know, I'm kind of leery about, but again, those people, you know, a lot of those people really want to help you. And it's a really gratifying experience when you do find those people. And then as far as, you know, to connect with me, my website is huntlandsla.com. And then you can find everything through there, Instagram, Facebook, email address, phone number, everything's on the website there.
Okay. We'll link you up on episode 177. All those links will be there. And Daniel, thank you very much
for
reaching out to me and sharing your knowledge here about landscape architecture and how it works and how similar it is. You know, everything you said just now can be applied to an architect's firm. So
sure.
I appreciate you sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, Mark. I really appreciate it.
If you liked what we shared here today, I ask you to go share it. Share it with a friend. Take this episode, entrearchitect.com/episode177, and go send a link to a friend. Email, Facebook, Twitter, I don't care how you send it. Just send it. Complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at that same link, entrearchitect.com/episode177. And don't forget to visit the website to learn more about Entree Architect Academy, our private online membership program built for you. You can build a better business. We will show you how. To learn more, visit the homepage at entrearchitect.com. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and this sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.